Today we'll be asking why we suddenly became so obsessed about using less plastic and whether it will make any difference. And in opinion, Guardian columnist and environmental activist George Monbiot tells us why he's expecting to be arrested. We'll start after this.
When the rain comes down on tomorrow's brave new world, you'll put on your plastic raincoat, put up your plastic hood. Oh, wait a bit, it's stopped now. So you can open your plastic bag to see if that plastic hood has messed up your hairdo. If so, a plastic comb will soon put that right.
We used to love plastic. Not so much anymore.
Oh, plastics. Is that what we were talking about?
Yes, it is. But don't worry, you're not about to get a lecture. We know we have a big problem when it comes to plastic, and we're obsessively trying to use less. But actually, the first time people got really worried about the scale of plastic production and its impact on the environment was 50 years ago. I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, why wasn't our plastic crisis solved the first time round? And are we about to make the same mistake again?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Exactly. How do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics. Think about it.
There's sort of a honeymoon period with plastic in the 60s. Something sort of starts to shift in the 70s.
That's journalist Stephen Baranyi. I sat down with him in the studio to talk about his investigation into plastics.
Prior to 1950, reusable packaging, so you know, glass bottles and aluminum, have a 96% return rate.
Wow, so we did not have a disposable society at all.
No, the idea is totally, totally foreign.
But as plastic production increased, that changed. The bottle return rates plummeted.
By the 1970s, estimates vary, but the rate's about 5%.
That was a massive cultural shift. Instead of reusing stuff, people were chucking this cheap new material away. But then they saw rubbish piling up.
You get, you know, cities and municipalities saying there's too much trash and it's costing us, you know, millions to get rid of it.
So activists started organising protests,
essentially saying, you know, enough.
The plastics industry had to respond to this, so a number of them started pouring money into campaigns telling people to pick up litter.
Yeah, they sort of recognised that the big problem people have is almost like, it's almost like an aesthetic concern. They don't want to see the waste, they feel bad about the waste. And if there's a way to make that go away, then I think they assume it's just business as usual.
One of the industry-funded anti-littering campaign groups was called Keep America Beautiful, and it had big funders from the plastics industry, like Dow Chemical and Mobil Oil, as well as drinks companies like Coca-Cola and Pepsi.
So their most famous ad is this crying Indian ad, where they have an actor portraying a Native American sort of canoeing up a river choked with garbage, and he ends up in the center of an American city. He makes his way to the side of a road, which is also choked with garbage, and then he's hit in the face by a bag full of garbage from a passing car, and he sort of sheds a single tear.
Some people have a deep, abiding respect for the natural beauty that was once this country. And some people don't. People start pollution. People can stop it.
I'm sure there was something like that in Britain in the 80s as well. Shall we Google it?
Yeah.
Advert, litter bug.
All right.
Keep Britain tidy advert. Here we go. Is this it?
So please
do your bit
and help
to keep Britain
tidy.
The viewers sort of exhorted that people cause this problem and people can stop it.
But then environmental groups started to question the message. They said the campaigns were wrongly pointing the finger at the consumer instead of the manufacturers that were churning out the plastic. In 1976, several of the environmental groups withdrew their support from Keep America Beautiful. They said it was an industry front working to divert attention from the real issues. And it wasn't just about litter picking. The industry was pushing recycling all over the world as well. in the United States.
Some of the first recycling depots are actually run by Coca-Cola and also by Mobil Oil.
Which sounds great, but...
Plastic is terrible when it comes to recycling compared to other products. Plastic degrades. So it's essentially, you can think of it as like a one-way ratchet towards the landfill or the ocean.
And again, it was all about the consumer rather than the producer.
More than one environmentalist and waste management person has told me that they refer to the whole process as wish cycling. And that little blue box in your kitchen, they call that the magic box because it just allows people to throw it in the box and forget about it. You know, I've done my part. You essentially see very little action on this issue right through the 90s, coming up into the mid-2000s. And the thing that really does change is the ocean.
Surviving in the open ocean has always tested animals to the limit. But today, they face a new additional threat. Plastic. Just over 100 years.
I mean, in Britain, you can sort of trace it to this extraordinary moment of primetime television, this BBC series Blue Planet, which is the premier natural history program.
I don't think that's giving it its due.
Yeah.
It's like...
It's an institution.
It's an institution. Yeah. Blue Planet, presented by David Attenborough, is an institution in Britain.
Yeah. David Attenborough, he's always like voted what, like the most trusted public figure or something?
He is, but what is the word? I'm trying to think of the word which has gone out of my brain when you say someone's... Oh, I know. Yeah. He's a national treasure,
yeah. Anyway.
So probably one of the most important individuals in British television does 6 minutes of what?
A pod of short-finned pilot whales.
They devote... about 6 minutes of time to these incredibly haunting images of the effects of plastic on the ocean.
A mother is holding her newborn young. It's dead.
It's an incredibly emotional impact. I mean, the images are quite haunting. It's this world that's alien to us, but also like you feel this deep empathy for the way that we've affected it.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry.
A lot of people cried. I remember looking at the reactions as it came up and you suddenly realised that a lot of people cried their way through those scenes. And you spoke to the Blue Planet producer. There was an enormous reaction.
Yeah, I mean, when they watch the show, they watch it on two screens, one with the show itself and the other one, they've got all these social media metrics. It's almost like the modern equivalent of the switchboard. And as soon as the footage of plastic in the ocean, of animals encountering plastic comes up, it just explodes, and you know, they say it's a reaction like they've never seen before.
And it's not just on social media.
Now, floating islands of plastic bottles, fish choking on plastic bags, these have been some of the most alarming and enduring images of 2017, and now MPs are demanding drastic action.
In Parliament, I mean, this year so far, plastic's been brought up 271 times, which is about 4 times as much as the entirety of last year. Politicians really, really take to this.
Right up to the Prime Minister.
Well, it's great to be here today at St Mary's Catholic Primary School in Maidenhead with members of the Eco Council, and we've been doing part of the Great Plastic Pickup. That's something that's been launched by Keep Britain Tidy with the Daily Mail.
It's not just Theresa May. We're all doing it. I'm reusing bags, recycling. I've even bought the compulsory bamboo cup. But look, is this just a repeat of what happened in the 1980s? Are we totally missing the point by focusing on the consumer rather than the producer again? I spoke to The Guardian's environment correspondent, Matthew Taylor, and asked him whether using less plastic will actually help things.
Oh, it's undoubtedly helping the problem. I mean, I certainly do it myself. I've picked up plastic on the beach this summer. But I think it's important also to recognise that at the same time as there's this growing awareness of the plastic problem and people are trying to do something about it, we've got a whole industry behind the scenes spewing out more plastic, which will increase plastic production over the next decade by 40%. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of new plastics are going to flood the world. 40% increase on where we are now, and where we are now is pretty drastic. And so that's a huge sort of tsunami of plastic coming our way in the next 10 years.
When we were all trying to kind of use less plastic, and there were fewer plastic straws around, I got quite worried about who it was who was making plastic straws. And I actually tried to Google
who these companies might be. Just tell me who makes plastic.
Well, it's not a little cottage industry with people weaving bits of plastic together. This is part of a huge huge fossil fuel industry. Basically, it's the big global corporations, ExxonMobil, Ineos, Shell, are all involved in the production of the extraction of fossil fuels that go to make plastic.
And I'm sorry if I'm being a bit stupid here, but they're oil companies. I don't really understand why they're producing plastic.
Raw materials to make plastic come from a fossil fuel extraction.
So it's almost like a side product.
Yeah, it's like a byproduct of the shale gas.
So plastic is easy money for oil giants.
It's important money for oil giants, yeah.
So these companies are responsible for plastic, which was a surprise to me, but they're also fossil fuel companies, so they're responsible for loads of worries about the environment.
If you take a step or two back from the picking up plastics on the beaches to work out where plastic comes from and then who's behind the raw materials that go into making plastic, you can see that there are two or three big ecological crises facing globally, one of which is climate breakdown, another one of which is air pollution, another one of which is biodiversity. And I think at the heart of all those, you can see our reliance on fossil fuels.
And to what extent is this a kind of repeat of what we saw maybe in the 80s, where industry is almost trying to deflect the problem onto the consumer?
Everything is put down onto the individual, and it's a consumer choice, and it's about individual action. I don't remember calling for my bananas or avocados to be wrapped in plastic. There's no need for it.
OK, well, we can talk about the individual action you and I might take, but seeing as we started with Theresa May, she's the Prime Minister, I mean, what should she actually be doing?
She should be taking a good, hard, long look at our dependence on the fossil fuel industry, and she should be trying to move us as a society and helping other governments move away from that. That's a big ask, but our generation is faced with that challenge.
So targeting the big companies rather than always looking at the consumer?
Absolutely. This can't be seen as solely a consumer choice. We're not going to become slightly better, slightly more ethical consumers and get our way out of these intertwined crises.
And can I ask you about recycling? Because I've been thinking hard about this since we've been doing this piece, and I go home and I get my plastic box and I stick it in the recycling box, and I'm wondering, should I be bothering to do that?
Absolutely. I think absolutely we should be doing that. Recycling and reusing, and what's called the circular economy. So instead of extracting more virgin material, reusing the stuff we've got, I think that is the future. I think it's really important to say that plastic is a fantastic material, and it's got all sorts of hugely important benefits that we've seen, from medical equipment to infrastructure to piping to the wrapping of certain foods and preserving them for longer. So we have to find a way of using plastic in a sensible, sustainable way. What we're doing now isn't either sensible or sustainable. Once I started reporting on this, you almost see the world slightly differently, and you just notice the plastic everywhere. Walk down a supermarket aisle, it's clothes wrapped in plastic, all sorts of nonsense.
I can see lots of plastic between us. Look at this.
Yeah, exactly. Plastic
microphone.
Plastic coffee cup.
Plastic cover.
Yeah.
I can tell people about my coffee cup. I've already told them that I'm using bamboo. Okay, so it's not all our fault.
Certainly not, no.
No, in fact, most of it's not our fault. I suppose what I really want to know then is, okay, I'll keep putting my plastic in my recycling box and I'll keep trying to reduce the amount of plastic I'm using. But it sounds like that's not the core of the problem. So what can I do individually about this?
We probably need to take one, two, three steps back and see where plastic come from, that it's a systemic issue. We need to start thinking about ways of addressing that and changing that. We need to work out a way of not being so dependent on fossil fuels. Be aware that this is part of a systemic problem, and we have to work out ways of changing that system, and that isn't easy. It's not straightforward, but I think that's a starting point.
So are you basically saying hold power to account?
Yeah, absolutely, hold power to account and collectively come together and push back where we can.
But what does that actually mean? What do I need to do?
You ask your representatives, political representatives, about it, what their views on it are, how they're going to challenge it, what they're doing about recycling. I think you organize collectively in your local communities to try and push back against these things. I think this is a slightly different issue, but it's quite connected. I was talking to a woman who is setting up something called the Extinction Rebellion, which is going to be a mass campaign of civil disobedience around the impending sort of climate breakdown. And this is all intertwined with the fossil fuel industry and plastic production and everything. And asked her what is the most useful thing that people can do. And she said to me, get involved, get active, get arrested if you're prepared to, even go to jail if you're prepared to.
Get arrested and go to jail, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really sobering conversation. She was a really intelligent, thoughtful woman, and she'd come to this conclusion that she was a scientific background. She'd come to this conclusion that that's where we're at now, that we need to be prepared to to take civil disobedience to that level if we're going to meet the challenge that we face. And that's not just about plastic, that's about the whole climate ecological problems we're facing. In the past, I would argue that a lot of the big leaps forward, big developments have come about from people coming together and taking action and changing the system as it stands, from civil rights to labour rights to, you know, working weeks to suffrage campaigns. That is not all, it's never been about individual action, it's been about collective action.
Well, I'm going to take that away and think very hard about it.
Okay.
Thank you, Matthew.
Go to theguardian.com to follow Matthew's reporting and to check out Stephen Baranyi's long read, The Plastic Backlash, What's Behind Our Sudden Rage, and Will It Make a Difference? After speaking with our journalists, we reached out to Steve Russell, Vice President of Plastics at the American Chemistry Council. He argued that using plastic can help the planet, saying plastics make packaging significantly lighter, helping to ship more products with fewer trucks. That, he added, reduces energy use and greenhouse gas emissions. He also said the industry had targets for reducing plastic waste by, quote, designing new products and materials, developing innovative technologies, and implementing new business models. After the break, you've signed a petition, you've written to your MP, you've protested, but are you prepared to get arrested for your cause? Welcome back. Now, in opinion, Guardian columnist George Monbiot on how far he is willing to go to take action for the environment.
I'm expecting to get arrested. I do need to square things with my family first, because having young children does make it all a little bit tricky. But if they're up for it, then I'm up for it. Sacrifice is the most powerful political tool, as the suffragettes knew, as the civil rights campaigners knew, as the anti-apartheid campaigners knew. So many people throughout history have been aware that it's only when you show that you're prepared to put your liberty on the line, and in many of those cases also your life on the line, that other people are going to take the issue as seriously as it needs to be taken. Most forms of protest are very polite and remain within the law and fit into the general social mores. But I don't think the general social mores are appropriate at the moment, because the social contract has been broken. You know, we obey the law and keep our heads down, and in return, government looks after us. It's not looking after us. What we're facing is a complete institutional failure to respond to the existential crisis that we're in. You know, we are literally losing our life support systems. Climate breakdown, environmental breakdown in general, mass extinction, disappearance of ecosystems, driven by this corporate capitalist model, which is simply not suited to the preservation of the world's living systems and therefore the preservation of human life. And when the institutions that are supposed to protect us have broken that contract, I don't feel that we are obliged to abide by that contract anymore. As soon as I heard about Extinction Rebellion, I thought, that is what I've been waiting for. The name itself was galvanizing, but when I saw that this was a movement of people who were prepared to be arrested en masse to contest the complete destruction of our own life support systems and all other life forms on Earth, I thought, I have to be part of that movement. I'm just so tired of tinkering around with these issues. You know, we're facing this huge crisis. And what are we doing? We're saying, oh, we should have a better kind of plastic cup and use a different shopping bag and stuff. This is how we're supposed to respond. We're supposed to see ourselves as consumers, and we're supposed to see ourselves as fundamentally powerless, that all we can do is tinker. And that's the mindset we have to break. We have to smash that mindset and respond in a way that matches the crisis. And that is a highly political response. And in my mind, for myself, that means civil disobedience. Now, of course, getting arrested is not for everyone. It's particularly difficult for people who might get sacked from their jobs, or people who've got young children, or people who are already victims of discrimination and might get beaten up. But, of course, it's not the only thing you can do. There's a need for loads of associated actions. Lobbying of politicians, community organising is really important. The next big action is on the 17th of November. It's definitely going to be the biggest environmental direct action we will have seen for a long time in this country. It's going to involve a lot of people. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know it's going to involve mass civil disobedience. And what I really hope is that it then becomes a trigger for the kind of non-violent mass movement that we need to see in this country.
To hear more from George, go to the website, buy the paper, and if you like Today in Focus, then subscribe and leave us lots of reviews, ideally positive. That's all we have time for. Today's producers were Brenna Daldorf and Leia Green. Sound design was by Axel Cocoutier. The executives were Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Join us again tomorrow.